Accession number 16722, Captain George Ledger, reel 14.
Captain Ledger, reel 14. Did you get the opportunity to go into the surrounding towns and villages in Cyprus?
We had the opportunity to go every night if we wished to, after we finished our parades and routine checks, is to go into Nicosia itself, which is about 20 minutes walk from the airfield at that time.
How did the Cypriots receive you?
The Cypriots at that time were mainly Greek. To us, it belonged to Greece at the time, Cyprus, and we were in the northern part of Cyprus. The Greek Cypriots were very aloof to us, really. And numerous occasions there were lots of attacks, not on the troops, but amongst themselves. There seemed to be a lot of fighting going on. And on one occasion, when walking down the main street in Nicosia, it would be about 8:30 at night, we were going to one of these pub things. We used to go to the pubs and have a drink, and there was a chap standing in the doorway at one of the houses beside the shops, and he just fell backwards, and he had been attacked with a knife just in front of us, and it was as bad as that, and that was happening regularly. A lot of that went on in Cyprus. It was very, very explosive atmosphere the whole time.
Was this Turkish against Greek Cypriots, or...?
It was Turks and Greece. When I said the Greek Cypriots was the northern part, was mainly Turks. It's the other way around. The Greek Cypriots in the south part, and the Turkish Cypriots which had the northern part of Cyprus.
And you say they were very aloof to you. Did they warm to you through time?
Well, we weren't such a lot, because we were only there for 4 months. And it was only at night time that we were going out there to have a drink and a little bit of entertainment. But the entertainment mainly was there. Too much of this prostitution, those sort of places, which was a natural thing when there's thousands and thousands of troops around, you know. And this, it was hidden, it was open, and anyone could avail themselves of it.
Was VD pretty bad in the battalion?
I wouldn't. It's not a thing I could comment on, because I wasn't aware officially. However, as he lived with them day by day, he found who was missing and where they were going to, and he didn't like comment on the situations like that. But there were some cases. But it was kept absolutely away from people who weren't involved with it. We weren't told, but we just put two and two together when people disappeared and had to go for treatment, just like.
Was it an offence to catch VD?
Well, as far as I was concerned, it was, but mind, I never heard that announced either. Because let's face it, in those days, looking back, there wasn't the information spread around about catching these sexual diseases and what they have at the present time. We all know about the things they used to use to prevent the disease, but at that time it wasn't so apparent. When we were back in, before we came to Cyprus, when we were in Ismailia, there was a special place where troops used to go for treatment after having been to these places, medical centres and that, to clean themselves and to wash themselves down, and ointments and such like to use, who provided for the troops in Egypt on these sites.
How did the battalion carry out itself with the civilians? Did they behave? Was there fighting? Was there clashes at all with civilians?
No, it was rather aloof. There was an aloofness to me. There was I never saw any fighting like DLI did with the Middlesex Regiment, where the two regiments getting together and fighting together. We always fought. Whenever the Middlesex and the DLI met, they were fighting. But this was at night time when they were out for a night. But the troops, the battalion, seemed to keep themselves to themselves and the civilians themselves to themselves. They never interfered. The only time we really met them as civilians was when we went into their shops and into the bars for entertainment. And then after a while, there again. The only people we met in the bars was the people who were waiting on and serving you with the food you get and the drinks. So as far as the civilian population, we didn't have a great deal of contact with them as such, as having contact, for the simple reason there was the language problem. Mind, the majority of people spoke English, but there were lots and lots of people who couldn't speak English and who couldn't speak to the troops. We didn't have a lot of actual contact. We kept ourselves away. In fact, we were too busy. We hadn't much time to spend talking to the civilians in Cyprus. As I say, we were only in there 4 months. And night time was the only time when we went into the city itself.
Were your rations supplemented by the fruits, etc., of Cyprus?
Well, you could get whatever you wanted to eat in Cyprus if you had the money to do it. But the wages of an ordinary soldier wasn't so big. They had to be very, very careful with what they had. And they got to a state then, well, they would make do with what they were getting. But they did avail themselves when they had some extra coppers. They did avail themselves. There's plenty of fruit to get. There's lots and lots of fruit which they didn't even have to pay for. You just had to go across the trees and things where it was growing wild. And just, well, when we say growing wild, it was growing on these orchards, which there didn't seem to be anybody around to watch them taking them.
Sport. Did you have organized sport?
Yes, we had football, cricket, and we did do a lot of hockey. But our main enjoyment in hockey was putting ourselves on bicycles. We used to get more enjoyment out of playing hockey on bicycles than what we did playing hockey as hockey. Because you had to stay up on two wheels and pedal after the ball and bash it. And naturally, the usual thing happened. People used to push the stick in your wheel and away you would go, and this sort of thing happened. It was great fun anyway. But we did have lots of sport, lots of football, more football than cricket, because cricket was an event where a certain number could just take part. You know, one team and there's just two bowlers. Everybody else seemed to be looking, whereas football, everybody could join in. You know, if you had 20 a side, you used to play. You know.
This was within the battalion itself and between battalions?
Yes, we had lots of sporting events between battalions. There was football, there was cricket. The main event between the battalions, my favourite, was the boxing. We had the boxing events.
Were there other regiments on the island with you?
I cannot say I got in touch with any other regiment on Nicosia. We were only stationed on Nicosia Airport, with the result that it was just my battalion around us. And I never contacted any other regiment. There were, of course, outside the airport. In fact, I could have been on the opposite side of the airport, such a big place. But our battalion was on the north side, which meant we could visit Kyrenia and places like that in the north of the island. But we didn't have any very, very much mixing with other regiments on the island.
Was mail coming through to you?
The mail was quite regular, yes. We didn't have any problem with mail. We had the aircraft forms we used to send in. And mail used to come regular from home. We didn't have very little trouble with the mail at that time, because we were still on a peacetime basis, more or less. We weren't out doing any fighting. We were just trying to keep ourselves safe from overhead bombardment from the German planes from Crete.
Your mail would be censored, no doubt.
All our mail was censored, yes. Even a sergeant's and just like all of the ranks' mail was censored.
And this was the officer's job, was it not?
It was the officer's job, yes. The same thing as when I was in France, when all mail was censored. And I had my New Testament taken from me from the church, because I had written in it in France with all the names of the towns I had been to. And I was given a New Testament in place of it. Yes, I've got it to this day.
You've got that
recorded.
Was there any leave in Cyprus to rest camps of any kind?
No, we weren't on there long enough for to apply for leave. People who left Cyprus on leave were people who had compassionate leave would be sent home back to this country. In my case, it wasn't in Cyprus, but it was in my two brothers were sent to him. One was because his house had took fire. It was when we were in France, before Dunkirk. And his house had been in fire, and he had been sent to him to look after things. In fact, he just lived down here at Ballymow, where the house was on fire. And another one was my other brother's wife had died, and he's of course, he'd been married 3 times, you see. And he was sent to home, given leave, compassion grounds.
Did you all remain in the same task all the time you were in Cyprus? You didn't move into the interior to do other tasks?
No, all our tasks on Cyprus, as the 8th Battalion, Durham Light Infantry, was to prepare the defences around the perimeter of the airport, digging these trenches, which I've already talked about, and preparing them, and they were first-class jobs. In fact, you couldn't see them from above once they were finished. It was just like looking over a field. They were beautifully finished off. In fact, those trenches, when they were finished off by private firms who came out and built them, bricked them, and whilst our own regimental joiners and such like built the roofs and such like, did all the supports, the corrugated sheeting, it was the outside firms who came across and finished them.
You would no doubt have the usual duties to perform, guards and so forth.
That went on for 24 hours non-stop. That was the whole time we were on Cyprus. Because it was very, very dangerous. Everything was dangerous at the time. Security was very, very tight. It had to be on such occasion. Because it could have been invaded at any time. We were expecting invasion from Crete at any time. And therefore, the main part of our duties there was preparing the trenches and standing to and carrying out these defence manners.
Were you paraded in the usual way for your guard duties with the high standard of turnout? Does that demand it?
Yes, we would definitely we would definitely have to parade correctly dressed. In fact, it was at the time when we became very, very careful about which way you wore your, at night time especially, when you were wearing your, not your topi, your hat, your cap. It had to be in the middle of your head, the DLI, not on the side. It had to be right in the middle. That was the 8th Battalion, Durham, and Durham Infantry. And it was the Sergeant Major who enforced that rule. And if you, God help anybody whose hat wasn't immediately straight up and down. If it was on one side, you were in charge, basically. But we had to be properly dressed. And, of course, on those conditions, you couldn't be immaculate because you were wearing the type of uniform, which is long KD trousers at night time when the when it was night, dark, and shorts during the day, and just ordinary shirts, and then your large topi. But it didn't lend itself to be meticulously dressed. It was more of a casual appearance, but everything had to be tallied. Everyone was dressed the same.
Were there any major parades that you carried out during the time you were there?
We had a major parade when we were there and inspected by the Major General. It was the divisional commander. I just cannot remember his name, whether it was Ramsden or Lumsden, I'm not sure which. It's just a long time, I can't remember now. It was either Ramsden or Lumsden. But we had to be very, very careful when we're having these on Cyprus, because you could be attacked with these aeroplanes any time. And we hadn't to be getting involved with large groups of troops, you know, large groups. You hadn't to be all together. So that didn't happen very, very often. In fact, I think in our case it just happened once the whole time I was on in the 4 months that we had one large gathering like that. Previous to that, we used to have regular battalion exercises for the benefit of the regimental sergeant major, because he was the man who created discipline or made discipline throughout the regimental sergeant major. He was the one. And the whole battalion used to be paraded, and the officers used to be on the outside while the RSM was giving us what you call the guns, you know.
Who was it at this time?
There again, names...
Wasn't Spike Jennings? Was
so that's RSM Jennings, that's the name of the chap.
He was quite a character.
Jennings, I'm pleased you mentioned that. Jennings, he was a character. He was a strict disciplinarian. What he said goes, if he was in the vicinity, you stood upright, and you didn't walk with a slouch. If he was a 500 yard, you didn't, because he would see you. But mind, he was a fair man, RSM Jennings. I found him, he was a fair man. And during the time, more so when I became a sergeant, I had more contact with him then. He was really fair. He always gave, to my mind anyway, he seemed to give people the benefit of the doubt when he was talking or telling them, just like. And he was not too quick to take umbrage at anybody. If he wasn't sure about anything, he would take his time and think before he answered, you know, before he told anybody. He was really a character, very, very strict. And you just had to be told that he was in the vicinity before you were on your pins. You were waiting so that you were on your best behaviour.
Had there been any changes in the company command?
Oh, in our company, yes. Throughout, Captain Clark, who was Lieutenant Preacher. I just can't remember all the names now, Harry. I'm sorry about that.
But the quality of the officers, was that still of a high standard?
We had some of the best officers you could ever wish to have. And I'm not just saying that because I was one of the A company. But lots of people used to say, and because at the beginning of the war, we had an influx of young officers who, to us, originally, we thought, I'd never had any training. They were just got the jobs as young officers to come to us because they had money. They were money people. That's the impression we all got. Because suddenly, when we were called up, all this big influx of officers come. But little did we realize that they had been having private treatment, you know, unknown to us. So we were a little bit knocked back. We should have been really aware that they just weren't coming green to us. We assumed they were green just coming in. But they turned out to be excellent. Every one of them we had, at least in my time. I can only talk right up to 1942, when I left the regiment in 1942. March the 14th, I think it was, or March the 18th. March the 14th, it was. When I finally was commissioned, and I ceased to be a member of the 8th Battalion then.
What was the health of the battalion like on Cyprus?
The health was a matter which it didn't seem to be any concern. It didn't seem to be a problem, because although it was a hot place to be in, we had been across to Egypt and got used to a lot of the heat, and I found that I'd been on an island myself. It was we were more able to continue outside than what we could in the desert across Egypt. I would assume it was the fact that we were surrounded by water.
It was a pleasant climate.
It was very, very, very pleasant, yes. Very pleasant, different altogether to Egypt. At the same time, we weren't very far from the coast in Egypt. We were 90, 100 miles away from where we were. About that.
Duties as a sergeant, you said it was 8th Platoon.
I was in 8th Platoon. I was in charge of 8th Platoon, but I was also a corporal in number 8 section of 8th Platoon.
But as a sergeant, your duties as a sergeant, and obviously they were very, very important. What or how important was your relationship with your men as a sergeant?
Well, the importance, it was created before you reached the rank of a sergeant, you see, Harry. You knew your men, you knew all these men before you reached the rank. As you're rising up through the ranks as a private soldier, you start together with these men. You become a lance corporal and you're still with these men. You become a corporal and you're still with these men. And you've got to give these men credit for realizing, for understanding that whilst you're progressing, they're still there. And they've got to continue to stop there and continue to take orders from you as you're rising up through the ranks. But they accepted that. And they were marvellous. I never had any drawbacks with any of the men I had. And I got on well with all of them. There's an odd time when people's thoughts didn't agree with one another, but that's just normal life. But no, they didn't seem to hold back anything against any of the NCOs who were getting rising up in the ranks. When I eventually became a sergeant, which was the highest rank I had in the ranks, I knew everybody in the whole company by name, you know, we just knew, hello Harry, hello Bill, and all this. But that familiarity just had to cease when you were on parade, of course. And it was just when you were outside, off parade, and outside for a night out, that you talked to them as such. The fact of being, the difference between a sergeant, you had to be aware of the fact that you had three times as many men under your command than what you had as a corporal. And that you're talking about three times the responsibility. It's more than three times the responsibility, because when you're trying to put three sections of men together into a platoon, you've got to accommodate the fact that you need a platoon headquarters to run them. So that was something else you had to think about. And it was very easy to me, because I knew all the lance corporals and corporals, having risen up through the ranks with them. and I knew what their attitude to the men below them were, and it was easy to get them sort of mouth to mouth, word by word, you know, orders to them, no problem.
Knowing them so well, obviously you were very close contact, as you say, with them. Did they tend, or did you encourage them to come to you with their problems?
We used to get them regular, not only myself, but the other sergeants in our company. The lads, I call them lads for the sake of being familiar, if they had any problems, they used to come to you. But they used to ask the corporal first. You said, do you think I should see the sergeant? Little things like that. If it was a matter of mainly, they would get despondent with bad news from home. These home matters, you know, domestic matters. And that's where I used to find more of my requests from the men under us on domestic matters. I remember one case went on right throughout my whole time with the regiment. I had a man there who was a full corporal eventually, and he couldn't write a word, and he couldn't read a word. Couldn't write a word of English, and he couldn't read a word. And he used to come to me as a lance corporal, and I kept it up the whole time as a sergeant with him, to read and write his letters for him. And he had a brother with him and all, but his brother wasn't very, very bright, but he used to leave it all to me for the tent of his eldest brother's letters. And he was a good age. I was talking about when I was 19 to 23 year old, and he would be, 28, 29. A big difference. And we didn't do this in front of everybody, you know. He used to bring his letters from home. He used to come along with me and just sit down like we are. And I used to read his letters off to him. Then he used to tell us what he wanted to send back. And I used to write them out for him. Write what he wanted me to say, and then send them out back to his people at home. Call him Whiteford, that one, Corporal Whiteford. And he had a brother who was a private in the same section as he was.
It was quite a trustful relationship.
It was a very, very, very trustful relationship. We had now and then tempers would get flared, which was natural amongst men who were under such stress. Let's face it, we were all under a lot of stress. I think the people who had been in command of other people were able to cope with it better, I think. Because we seemed to understand what they were going through because we had gone through it before. I think that was the...
As a sergeant, though, you wouldn't give punishments, did you?
No. We didn't give punishments ourselves. We were just disciplinarians for the matter of giving orders, not actual physical punishment or punishment by rank, or, you know, bring them in into the office and saying you're having 3 days CB. No way, we did never overstepped our mark that way. We couldn't do it. We weren't allowed to do it. Punishment, all ranks in the army were carried out by officers.
No, you say that you were there for about 4 months, which would take you to November time. What happened? How did you know, or when did you know that you were going to move again?
It was in November. We got word that we were going to move to take over and guard the Iraqi oil pipelines. So we prepared the way. We moved across from Cyprus to Haifa.
Was it a similar rush job?
It was a similar rush job to what? Just as quick, because the German airplanes are still around, flying overhead. And it was such a rush job just to get across to Haifa. It was a longer journey that time. And we went to Haifa anyway, and we moved from Haifa up onto the borders of Palestine then, and Lebanon, and Syria. We were in camp there, and then we were just really putting ourselves together and getting sorted out with the instructions of what we had to do to guard the oil pipeline. And it was whilst we'd been in there for over 3 or 4 weeks, we were given orders we had to move to the Iraqi oil pipelines.